just bought an island.
Pablo Escobar's island. Oh my gosh.
Ding! We're gonna throw a festival, yeah.
Within 48 hours,
they sold out. These guys are either completely full of or they're the smartest guys in the room.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon, sponsored by Calm, the number one app for sleep, meditation, and relaxation. I'm Victor Mattis, along with Sonny Bunch and Jonathan V. Last. I'd like to remind you the Subbeacon is available on iTunes and Google Play. Just look at our podcast and search for Subbeacon. You will easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. I'd like to emphasize tell your friends because it turns out even now, if you look at all these wonderful five-star reviews, there are people who are just discovering, rediscovering us now. Right,
yeah.
Sonny?
Yeah, a lot of people did not know that we have started again,
and
but we have,
and here we are on episode, here are. And here we are on episode 7. JVL, how are you?
I'm fantastic. Victorino, how are you?
I'm doing well. What's going on in your life?
Is it cold enough for you? Very cold
lovely.
Outside.
Yes, lovely.
Yeah. No, everything's good. How are you? Has life been excellent?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. But I had a question for Sonny. Why do you hate Rami Malek so much?
I was going to bring this up too. It's
really
a lot of synergy today.
Please do.
So I am under attack right now on Twitter,
as you should be,
from the Bo Rap community. The Bo Rap community, the Bohemian Rhapsody community. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
A self-styled collective of Freddie Mercury and
Friends of Rami
who are coming after me. Mm. No, it's actually fascinating. I'm totally interested in this because I tweeted when Malek won the Golden Globe, I tweeted something.
A wonderful moment.
As I'm like live tweeting, you know, the Golden Globes, you know, half cocked at, you know, 10:30 at night, you know, kind of on my sixth glass of
what?
Whatever. Yeah. And I was like, LMAO, Rami Malek is going to win the Oscar for looking kind of like Freddie Mercury, isn't he?
Mm-hmm.
And so it was, and so like whatever. I just tossed this off, and of course,
so
it gets retweeted a bunch, and you know, and then the Bohemian Rhapsody community finds it, and it's an interesting mix of accounts tweeting at me. On the one hand, you have a bunch of, I think, actual like real people who are just into Bohemian Rhapsody,
sure,
and who are like really into Rami Malek. There's like a whole subculture of Rami Malek.
Rami Malek subculture.
People, which is, I mean, I guess it makes some sense because every famous person has a subculture of fans kind of fawning all over them.
Yeah.
But Malek himself is such a weird looking individual that it's even more amusing. But there's that group of fans, the people who are just like really into Rami Malek and like, okay, fine, I get it. That's neither here nor there. The far more interesting angle to this is that there's a significant subsection of people tweeting at me. Maybe 20% of the tweets I'm getting about this are from accounts that have been created in the last 2 to 3 months, November, December 2018, a few January 2019s.
Oh boy.
That are extremely into Bohemian Rhapsody. You know, they've got Bohemian Rhapsody banner images, their profile pics are either members of Queen or Rami Malek as Freddie Mercury.
I can't believe you had so much time on your hands that you could do this. It's really impressive.
And it is a coordinated effort, perhaps, or maybe it's not. I don't know, but it's a very interestingly fine-tuned attack on anybody who is criticizing the movie. And also fine-tuned praise for anyone who is praising the movie. So it is. I would be willing to wager a small sum of money that there is some Oscar fluffer out there who has created a botnet designed to pump up the engagement for Bohemian Rhapsody and make it look like there's this real grassroots support for this movie. And look, and frankly, they don't even need to do this. This is a movie that grossed $800 million, right? It's like the amount of money this movie has made and the amount of enjoyment people have gotten from it doesn't. You don't really need a faux grassroots campaign for it, but it is. There are other movies that this has been done for. A friend of mine, a critic who writes for the Washington City Paper and the Washington Post, said something nasty about Vice, and immediately heard from several accounts that either were created in the last few months or had been reactivated. So, like, one account had been dormant for like 5 years, and then had 50 tweets in a row about Vice. So I am convinced there's a PR company out there somewhere that looked at the 2016 election and was like, this thing that is breaking American democracy, that's exactly what we need to introduce into our Oscar campaigns.
Question.
Yes.
Why do you assume that it is a Hollywood PR company and not the Russians? Well, because it's possible Guccifer 2.0 saw the havoc that the Russian intelligence services were able to wreak on the American presidential election and thought that now it was time to strike at the true heart of America.
Entertainment.
At the entertainment industrial complex.
The entertainment industrial complex by monkeying with the most sacred award that we have. More sacred even than the presidency.
Mm-hmm. I would say that's a fair assessment of the Oscars.
Oscar. Yeah. Yeah.
It's entirely possible. Well, I mean, look,
could we get Mueller on this?
It's entirely possible that this is what has happened. I think we do need a federal investigation.
Expand
if Mueller isn't already looking into the Russian bots pumping up the Bo Rap community, then I don't. Yeah. What's even doing with his time?
Could we get a Sonny Bunch dossier on this that maybe we could hand over to people in the FBI somehow?
Are you also saying that you? Is Rami Malek, if he wins the Academy Award for Best Actor, you're saying that that will be tainted and it won't be strictly because of his sheer talent?
It's hard to judge on these things. You know, you only really have to swing a few votes here and there, a few votes in the Hollywood Hills. A few votes in Malibu.
Yeah.
And, you know, you do that.
Very good. Very good, Gmail.
Get it. In the crucial Waukesha County district of Hollywood.
Yeah. And you said LMAO because you don't think he should get the Oscar for Best Actor.
No. I mean, I think any reasonable person can look at that performance and realize it's not, you know, that impressive.
JVL, you think he's going to get it? You think he could get it?
Yeah, that's why. I have a confession.
Yeah.
Sure. For, like, years, I believed, for no reason that is intelligible at all, that Rami Malek was somehow related to Malin Ackerman. Like, my brain just transposed all of the letters and basically turned them into brother and sister.
That was like some sort of weird dyslexic or anagramic.
Like Corby Cummer,
yes. But for years.
So you thought that Rami Malek...
And Malin Ackerman.
And
yes.
Malin related. Ackerman.
Whenever I heard one of their names, I transposed the last name either to Malik.
I thought you were going to say Art Malik, the villain from True Lies.
You thought that the kind of goofy looking small person was related to the statuesque, like Scandinavian actress. Had you ever seen them together? Had you ever seen pictures of either of them? Had you ever seen either of them in any setting?
I had seen them both, but never together. Mm-hmm. Had I seen them together, I would have seen the names on the chyron, and my idiot brain would have stopped scrambling all of the letters.
Okay.
I hope Rami Malek gets the Academy Award for Best Actor. He was great as Fred Meyrick. He worked his butt off. Anyway, I'm doing fine, Sonny.
Did you shovel all the snow?
I just wish Peter Robinson was here for every one of these.
Bohemian
Rhapsody it's interludes
like, it's
that
like
you
a
do.
Stake in the heart. I'm off my meds because I'm feeling fine. But I
which meds? The gout meds,
Xyloprim.
The blood pressure
no,
meds.
No, I'm never going to get off the blood pressure meds. The Xyloprim for the gout.
Question.
The gout watch. Yes.
Do
gout
you
watch.
Have
thank you.
One of the little seven plastic compartment medicine things with all
like,
the days
like
of the week?
Friend Lee did.
So that you set them all up on Sunday night so you know what all of your meds are for the week so you don't get confused.
And I also have the pill splitter. You know the pill splitter? My wife actually suggested I get one of those, and then she started laughing at me at her offering the suggestion of getting the Sunday to Saturday thing. Huh. So I have it all set for my week. So I don't forget, because sometimes I'm like, what am I taking this morning? You know, but no, I'm off the meds. And
off the gout meds.
Off the gout meds, because I'm feeling good. But I, part of me worries that it's like, you know, with people who are mentally ill, and they go, I feel better now. I'll get off the meds because I feel better. When precisely they're feeling better because of the meds. Right. So we'll see what happens.
Are you doing this under the supervision of a doctor?
At the moment, no. At the moment, no.
So you just stop taking them of your own volition?
I'm sorry. I'm having this twitch now. I'm doing. Yeah. I decided. You know what? I haven't refilled the prescription.
And he got into Georgetown, and I didn't.
I'm just gonna wing it. We'll see.
How far did Georgetown JBL make it in the brackets?
I want to say to the Elite Eight.
Okay. But we're definitely on a gout watch because
gout watch
Tuesday. Thank you, Sonny. Tuesday had as I mentioned to you. Had a lunch with some friends of the Beacon at a wonderful place in Georgetown, La Chaumière, and I had sweetbreads. Well, that's organ meat. If you're into glands, it's delicious. And then I had...
You take some amazing lunches while you're working.
It's work. You're networking. And they insisted that I get the Grand Marnier soufflé. So that was a little bit of a
concern.
Couldn't
say no.
No, you know, it would be a diplomatic work. It would be a diplomatic incident. You know, I did go to Georgetown. I know about the diplomacy thing. You cannot
protocols.
Say no. Protocols. Very important. But I didn't know.
It's like that scene in Temple of Doom.
You must eat. Oh, you mean in the village?
Yeah, I'm thinking in the village.
Before that, in the village.
Yeah, when the starving just villagers give cake.
Sometimes it's that, and sometimes it's souffle. So we'll see what happens. And the other weird thing is, talking about gout, is how many more people now will actually connect with me either on social media or even in person that they are also fellow sufferers. And you'd be surprised, Sonny, I'm not the only one suffering gout in this office.
Oh, can I guess who else is?
Yeah, sure. One guess. You get one guess.
Liz Harrington.
I'll go with Todd.
Wow. That was based on an age thing, but no.
No, it wasn't based on an age thing. It was just because I see you guys talking sometimes.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I just assume you're talking about gout.
But no.
The only thing I know about you, Vic, is that you have gout. So whenever I see you talking with someone, I assume
that
the other
that's
person
all we're talking about.
Has gout, too.
Steven.
Oh, Gutowski?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I know. Shocking. And for him, it's really bad because it's sort of like – it doesn't have to be – you know, it's not in the same place for him. I think it's like in the ankle. So it actually is very painful on the heel if you're walking. When it's in full flare, he says it feels like he's walking on broken glass. Speaking of glass, over the weekend, Glass remained at the top of the box office with $19 million, followed by The Upside with $12 million, and Aquaman in third place – with $7 million. Really, the first two slots of the box office were paralyzed this weekend. But I guess that's good news for M. Night. Yes?
It's worth noting that the second weekend numbers on Glass are way lower than the second weekend numbers for Split.
Split.
Mm. Audiences not as into Glass. I just want to note that Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse
yes.
has held extremely well. I remember we were all kind of disappointed that it had done about $30 million in its opening weekend, and it is now at about $170 million. It had only a 20% drop this weekend.
Nice.
It is holding extremely
nicely. I believe we all said it would play for weeks and weeks and weeks.
We did.
It had legs. Did it win the Golden Globe for Best Animated?
Yes.
It should
I think so. I can't. Right. I think it
all
did,
right.
yeah.
All right. It might have been Tarzan. at least for Best Song.
And
you know who liked a tweet of mine this morning?
Ooh.
Amy Mann.
Really?
Yeah.
Did you tweet at her?
No.
Did you tag her into it?
It was about.
Did she follow you?
It was about the piece I wrote about Chris Christie, and she liked it.
Wow.
Wait a minute. So she follows you?
I don't believe so.
That's wild.
She may follow my wife.
She knows you're a fan, though.
Liberal
she knows you
Hollywood chiming in favor of the, you know.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, but
I see what's happening here. We should also note that Aquaman is now the highest grossing DC movie of all time.
Because it's the best DC movie
take
of
that,
all time.
Dark Knight Rises.
So much
trash
better than Dark Knight Rises.
Movie. Aquaman, New King. New King on the
better
block.
Better than Man of Steel. Hey, can we talk about Ben Affleck?
Ben Affleck out. Ben Affleck so out as Batman.
Matt Reeves is Mr. The Superman is the new movie. The Superman.
The Batman.
The Batman. Sorry, wrong movie. Skip. Superman.
Wait. What happened? Is that what's happening? We're getting a movie called The Batman?
The Batman.
Starring Matt Reeves.
Oh, he's
directed by Matt.
Directing Matt Reeves.
Directed by Matt Reeves, who directed Let Me In, Cloverfield, and the two last movies in the new Planet of the Apes
now,
trilogy.
Now, I hope this will be an origin story to explain to audiences where the character comes from.
It's supposed to be a young Batman. A young Batman.
That's great. We don't know where young Batman Year One.
Question.
Is that what this is?
Can we get a movie? Can we get a movie where we see how Batman begins?
Ooh.
Could we get that, please? That's what I need.
Like it.
And then I want to see him rising. So there you go.
I like. Sonny, this is a super, Superman. I have a real question for you, a serious question.
Okay.
When you say that Ben Affleck is your favorite Bruce Wayne,
I said maybe my favorite Bruce Wayne.
Is that terrible? Like that tweet you did about the pothole in Roslyn, like this insanely calculated troll where you know that saying that Ben Affleck is your favorite Batman would be too much, but if you just say he's your favorite Bruce Wayne, it's almost halfway plausible and you know people get... Is that what that is?
I don't discuss my methods on this show. You know, I have a very specific sort of tweet formula that is designed to drive engagement and increase
following. Are you auditioning for Fuck Jerry?
Numbers. Are we going to have to bleep that every time we mention it?
I don't think we can bleep it. It's a proper name.
It's a name.
Well, it's a brand name.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that in a minute. Let's not use it. Let's not use it
liberally.
But hold on.
So what happened to Ben Affleck? He's gone.
Ben Affleck was going to be out ever since the end of Justice League tanked. I mean, they're getting rid of Ben Affleck. They're going to get rid of Henry Cavill.
Well, here's why. I mean, if I could just explain to you why,
please.
Because Justice League was so successful.
Yeah. Oh, that's it. They want to.
That they realized it would be impossible to top themselves
artistically and financially.
Both artistically and financially, and so they've decided to leave the stage in order to allow new creative talent to reinvent the franchise.
Studios are so thoughtful. Studio execs really are so thoughtful.
They really are.
Who's in the running? Who do they saying is going to be the next?
No, but there's no names yet. I mean, this is now the next 6 months is who's going to be Batman? Bah, and there's going to be 50 stories a day on all the dumb nerd sites. Just to say, you know, do I think that he is the best Bruce Wayne? What I mean by that is I like that version of Bruce Wayne, the kind of like older, drunk, snarly, as opposed to the callow young playboy Bruce Wayne. I prefer the...
If you like that flavor, why don't you like Michael Keaton?
Well, Michael Keaton...
Because Michael Keaton plays him as crazy.
I agree.
And I love it.
Yeah, Michael Keaton plays Bruce Wayne as just a little bit more... I mean, I think Michael Keaton is still possibly the gold standard. I don't know. Michael Keaton and Christian Bale probably won too. But they're also in the best of the Batman movies, so it's hard to separate. But I like the whole Ben Affleck as like the CrossFit doing angry drunk old man leaving models in his bed so he can go wander around in his Batcave Batman. That's my preferred Batman mode.
All right. But I was gonna say you mentioned earlier F. Jerry. JVL, and that brings us to what we're discussing mainly today, which is not any of the movies in the box office, but rather two very interesting documentaries on Netflix and Hulu on the Notorious Fire Festival. Sonny, what's happening here?
So Hulu and Netflix released competing documentaries about the Fire Festival within a couple days of each other last week. Was it last week or the week before? But it's totally fascinating because the two movies are pretty similar insofar as they are both about the myriad ways in which social media and the hype machine and everything else is conspiring to destroy America. But looking at these two documentaries in tandem is also fascinating because it's an interesting way to think about how documentaries themselves work. So the Netflix documentary was produced in cooperation, I guess, with the Jerry Media or whatever. There's a social media influencer company who they go by the moniker Fuck Jerry, I guess. And they worked in concert with Netflix to make a documentary about the Fyre Festival. They have a bunch of the footage from the initial commercial shoot, which we'll get to in a second.
Really great stuff.
And there's a lot of interviews with those guys and like members of the team. And also they do a really good job of the Netflix documentary does a much better job of interviewing the actual people on the island where this Fyre Festival was supposed to take place. The Hulu documentary, their big gambit here is to have the guy who founded the Fyre Festival, Billy McFarlane. He's on camera talking about, you know, his life and his childhood and also, you know, what went wrong with the festival and how he just dreamed too big and et cetera. So
V1.
V1.
Yes.
Fyre Festival V1 was a failure. We'll get to all that. So Fyre Festival was marketed to millennials as like the new Coachella. It's going to take place.
But more exclusive.
But more exclusive, more expensive. It's going to take place on an island that Pablo Escobar owned.
The Fyre company bought an island
that was owned by Pablo Escobar.
And it should be said that Fyre itself is an app.
Fyre itself. Well, this whole festival was designed to promote the Fyre app, yeah. which is basically the Uber of booking talent.
Literally, what they said.
Swipe left or swipe right for birthday party. Okay.
So to promote this festival, they put together a video with a bunch of basically supermodels.
Mm.
They get, you know, Emily Ratajkowski and Bella Hadid.
Those are Instagram models, not supermodels.
I think Emily Ratajkowski has transcended to supermodel status.
I will reserve judgment on the other ones, but Emily.
How dare you?
I actually paid McFarlane money for Fyre Festival, even watching the documentary because I saw Emily Ratajkowski's in it.
I can go to an island with Emily Ratajkowski. All right, V2.
I paid him money, and I didn't even realize what happened. That already happened.
Just go to a Bernie 2020 rally. You can get it for free.
So anyway, this festival is promoted with this really slick looking commercial of all of these models swimming around on this deserted island. All of these models slash, as one of the interviewers puts it, and some random white dudes in the background.
That's the outrage, right? That's the outrage.
And this was then promoted by the Instagram models on their Instagram pages with this orange tile. The idea of the orange tile is to catch your eye as you're scrolling through your Instagram feed. You're like, what is this? Why are all of these orange tiles showing up on my Instagram feed? The whole thing is such an epic disaster of society. But it's actually really smart marketing because people are stupid. Mm-hmm. We have to remember that people are stupid and that they will do anything to make their lives marginally better, make their miserable, meaningless lives marginally more entertaining. And if you're some Trustafarian, if you're some, you know, rich kid who doesn't really have to do anything with his life, what could possibly be more fun than going to an island with a bunch of models and hanging out and watching Blink-182?
Except, of course, when they get there.
So once they get there, it's a disaster. We all remember what happened with the Fyre Festival. Yeah. You know, they've paid tens of thousands of dollars for this luxury, for these luxury accommodations, and they get there and it's FEMA tents with mattresses that have been soaked by the rain and also urine, and the meals are pieces of bread with cheese on them. I mean, it's like
sandwich.
like prison food, basically.
It looked like it.
So anyway, it's a big disaster, and now everyone is suing them. Blah, blah. So the two documentaries again are very fascinating because they're kind of in conversation with each other, but also in competition with each other. There's a very snarky tag at the end of the Hulu documentary.
Yes.
That's like the F. Jerry guys are working on their own documentary about the Fyre Festival. And it's interesting. It's interesting to watch. The thing that strikes me the most about both of them is the utter... the wanton criminality of Billy McFarlane on camera, especially in the Netflix documentary. You get much more of this in the Netflix doc. There's a whole bit at the end where he invites a camera crew in to watch him and his cronies sell tickets to events that they don't have.
The NYC VIP.
to the red carpet for the Met Gala, to the Victoria's Secret runway show, to, you know, I don't, the Super Bowl or whatever, the Grammys, it's like private concerts with Beyonce. It's insane. It's actually insane. The total balls on this guy.
Right.
I can't tell if he's incredibly brave or incredibly stupid or both.
It's, you know, again, it's the sucker born every minute.
Too. No, he is not brave. I mean, he's pathological and stupid.
He's just a stupid person.
And had he been caught and severely punished somewhere early, because I bet you anything, this kid was running like plagiarism scams in middle school and cheating on tests and all this. And my guess is that the system just sort of, you know, nobody,
just there are no,
he just passes him on and figures, well, you know, like someday he'll go to Bucknell and he'll get a middle management job somewhere. And
yeah, him being a Bucknell kid was one of the least surprising aspects of this.
You know, when I would say this,
JVL,
I am not terribly sympathetic to most of the social justice stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But whenever you hear people talk about white privilege, and you see a guy like Billy McFarland, you have to stop and say, yeah, okay. I mean, okay. The way, way far left has a point here.
I don't know
about, I mean, a guy like that just getting passed off and passed off and passed off until there are, you know, other stupid rich white people handing him checks for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
And there's a bit in the Hulu documentary where an African American gentleman is like, yeah, I spent some time in prison and I was trying to explain it to Billy, and he was just like, no, I'm not going there.
That was the Netflix one.
And then that was a Netflix one.
That was the camera guy. That was the camera guy who was fantastic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It was. Mm-hmm. Did you prefer one to the other?
Yeah, you know what?
Did you watch first? Is the more the most important
I watched
question.
The Netflix one.
I think that's the correct order. I think you should watch Netflix first.
And I
Hulu
was reluctant
second.
To watch the Hulu one after I read our friend Paul Crookston's review of it, where he reviewed both and he said the Netflix one was better. But for the purposes of the show, I temporarily subscribed to Hulu. Remind me to cancel that. So I watched the Hulu documentary. But you know what? The Hulu one was actually not that bad. So I had lower expectations for it. What's really interesting about the Hulu documentary and the, quote, interview with McFarland is not – it's part of it is obviously what he says. But I love these pauses where they just have him looking in silence out into space, you know. And clearly I'm imagining that they just muted the guy behind the camera asking him some question or talking, and he's just staring there, you know, like contemplating his actions. But I don't know. I kind of like the idea of Magnesis. I'd like to be a part of that.
We haven't even discussed Magnesis. Magnesis. Let me tell you about Magnesis.
I like that idea. That's great.
Magnesis is it's a strip of metal that is the size of a credit card that you imprint your other credit cards on. And for the luxury of using this hunk of metal, you pay a couple $100 a year, and then you also get access to a townhouse where you can hang out with other people who are stupid enough to pay $200 for a piece of metal that works in place of their credit cards.
Cable news bookers had him on television.
The time. Saw that.
To talk
all
about
the content. Well, we can get to that in a minute.
Yeah.
I mean,
I was going to say one of the things that I enjoyed, that's the word, is I believe in the Netflix one, they interviewed the poor guy who, aside from the logistical nightmare that he had to deal with, in the end, they suggested, well, that's okay. You could deal with all these masses of people there because you're their yoga instructor. That one,
remember that was Netflix.
Yes, as if all these people, you know, needed meditation at that moment. Speaking of which, JVL,
yay! I get to talk about our friends at Calm. Calm.com is a meditation, relaxation, and sleep application that you put on your phone. Calm, CALM.com. We use it all the time at my house. We are longtime users of Calm and way predating their sponsorship of the show. And it's fantastic. I cannot imagine our lives without it. We use it primarily for our kids, and we use sleep stories. They have children's sleep stories. They have an ever-expanding library of these, and what they are is they are short-ish, some as short as like 12, some as long as maybe like 35-minute stories read to you by people with amazing voices, which then help your children fall to sleep. I would like to show you boys what we did the other night. The other night, my two girls, do not share a room. They each have their own room. But for some reason, when they had to share a room, it was a source of endless conflict, and we gave them separate rooms, and now they sleep together in the same room all the time.
Yes.
I don't understand it. So they normally sleep with Favorite in the bottom bunk and Little E in the top bunk. And the other night, they both crawled into the bottom bunk together because they said, "Daddy, we just want to cuddle for a couple minutes, and then we will. I will get up," Little E said, "and I will go to the top bunk." And I said, "Okay." And so I put on The Magic Wand by British actress and storyteller Anna Acton.
"Hello, my name's Anna, and tonight I'll be reading you a special bedtime story called The Magic Wand."
So I leave the room. I come back 5 minutes later, and this is what I see.
Look at it. Knocked them out. It's
the
like
two of them are. It was as if you had hit them in the neck with a blowgun dart with, like, you know, Brazilian toad venom or whatever that just bam.
I was going to say propofol, but okay.
And this is what it is like for our kids every damn night. It is amazing. If you are a parent and have kids who have trouble with sleep, which is like 95% of all kids, you should get Calm.com. It's amazing. For a limited time, the great people at Calm are going to give our listeners 25% off of a premium subscription to Calm.com. If you just go to Calm.com/subbeacon, that's Calm.com/subbeacon. They're going to give you 25% off. It gives you access to all of their sleep stories, all of their meditations. It's sensational. I personally pay full freight for this. I don't get the 25% off, and it is worth every penny. If they double the price, we would still be paying for it. So if you have kids out there, subscribe to Calm.com. And even if you don't, actually, the little siesta meditations are quite good. And I'll talk more about all those other things the next time. But Calm.com is fantastic. Calm.com/subbeacon.
Thank you, JVL. You texted us while you were watching the Netflix documentary. Did you do it in the same order, Netflix then Hulu, or did you just saw it? And you enjoyed this documentary.
I would say first, I believe this is a case where the two productions are actually complementary.
They are complements.
They are not in tension with one another. You feel you get a better sense of the whole having watched them both. The Netflix one is a better narrative exercise in terms of like explaining to you exactly what happened. But they clearly are hiding the football on the F. Jerry stuff.
Oh yeah.
In ways which are below board. I mean, by not saying up front, "Hey, just so you know, this is..." Because I found myself like, so where are they getting all this footage?
100%. I was thinking the same thing. Yeah.
And
it wasn't until I saw the end of the Hulu documentary, I was like, oh, that must be where they got all that stuff from.
Yeah. I don't have a huge problem with Vice News getting with F. Jerry in order to make this documentary. I don't even hold the F. Jerry people in all that much blame for all of this. I mean, look, they're a contractor. They're doing the thing. However, for them to never acknowledge their part, never acknowledge that the guy who's the lead on the account wound up quitting after the fact, and he then becomes, in the Hulu documentary, the principal witness against F. Jerry, that I find troubling and disheartening at the end. I will say this. I do not believe I have ever derived more pleasure in an emotional, spiritual, sexual sense from watching a piece of filmed entertainment than I did from watching the Netflix fire. Since watching it 3 days ago, I have, hand to God, pulled it up a couple times on Netflix and just fast forward to a random scene and just watched it for 5 minutes and then turned it off.
Makes you feel better.
Because everybody, save for the one Jamaican woman who
it's heartbreaking,
who runs the restaurant, who lost her savings.
Bahamian?
Bahamian, yes. And then the one camera guy.
Yeah.
Everybody is horrible. Have horrible things happen to you know, Victorina, what have I always said to you since we were 22 years old? There is no pleasure in life like watching bad things happen to
bad people.
And watching all of these things unfold, and they're all and watching these horrible people screw one another. It's
It is. It's something else. I mean, speaking of the FDR,
it is
porn.
It is pornographic. In the pleasure it delivers.
It's hard. It's kind of hard to explain to people what these people do exactly.
Who they are.
So they're basically social media advertisers. They create buzz for things on social media. For instance, here is a tweet that was sent out this morning by Taylor Lorenz at Atlantic Media. It's just a story. Scoop. Jerry Media, who had been working with the world record egg on Instagram in an unofficial capacity, pitched a nonprofit on the egg cracking to reveal the words, quote, impeach Trump, quote, as Donald Trump popped out doing the chicken dance. Now, that is a bunch of gobbledygook. I defy 90% of people to know what the world record egg is. The world record egg is it's a picture of an egg that went viral on Instagram and has the most likes of all time. But this is like what this company does, and what this company did for Fyre Festival was convince all of these Instagram models to pay. Kendall Jenner got $250,000.
Kylie,
no. I'm pretty sure it was Kendall. Pretty sure it was Kendall.
One of the younger Jenners.
Well, the most famous of the Jenners.
And the social Kendall. Media, the non-F Jerry social media girl in the Hulu documentary said, you know, and that's a bargain. $250,000 is a bargain.
It's a bargain.
The influencer manager.
So this is all about the influencers, right? These are what people do. They influence. They influence.
This is clearly what Rome looked like.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, this is...
Because we're all going along.
We've entered the final decadent stage.
It's, yeah.
If you think that there's a $250,000 of value to being delivered by an Instagram post...
She's got 98 million followers.
So what?
JBL, you don't understand how influencers...
Do people not understand opportunity costs?
As a modest influencer
myself...
You are
an influencer yourself, Sonny. It's true. This is kind of weird.
I often am deluged with offers to influence people on a per-pay basis, and I turn them down because my feed is not for sale.
Some
people's is.
Are you big on Instagram, Sonny?
I don't even have an Instagram account. Okay. I can't do it.
Not so much of an influencer, per se.
I'm a twit.
Question. Aside from Billy McFarland... Who did you hate most? Which character in the two documentaries did you hate most? Victorino, go.
The woman with the beauty mark on the airplane.
Lissa something or another.
We're on our private plane, and of course, she was joking about it. Who? What do you do for a living? Who are you? Here's the worst outrage. You didn't find this out in the Netflix documentary, but in the Hulu documentary, she didn't end up in the tent. They gave her like a... She was either on
she
a
was
boat
on like a yacht,
or something.
Yeah.
No, she was
that
in
was
a,
the
a
outrage.
Villa, and yes. She... And the Hulu, this was great. They had her saying, and you know, we felt really bad about it. And then they cut to something she posted on Instagram,
dancing.
Where she's running around and dancing in the villa.
I really did not like her.
She was bad. She was the one who's like, oh, it's worse than the lowest economy.
Right. No. That stuck in my mind.
All of these people, the only way mm-hmm. that these documentaries could have been better is if at the Fyre Festival, all the people there had been doused in napalm and burned alive while a tsunami then swamped the beach and pulled them, sucked them back out into the ocean. But somehow they burned to death while drowning.
While drowning, I was going to say something like the end of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
It was
all gone. You know,
it was amazing. And like the Netflix one, the red haired guy with the vineyard vine shirt who was like,
I think he's in both of them.
The second one, he's only in video. Like you can see him in the background of video on the school bus. And he's like,
No, he gives an interview too. I'm pretty sure that guy gives interviews in both. But he's super annoying.
Sonny,
do you have other
favorite villains from the documentaries?
No, I mean, I mean, Billy McFarlane in the Netflix documentary, in the bit at the end where he's running the ticket scam, which we find out in the Hulu documentary he had done before Fyre Festival.
Yes.
Which again, it like gets back to JBL's point that nobody at any point stopped this guy from doing his stuff until he was like running up $40 million of charges to various people on an island in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. I mean, the whole thing is just amazing.
What are you, both of you guys, what are your thoughts on Ja Rule, JVL?
I'm so glad.
We haven't even mentioned Ja Rule.
Because Ja Rule is the guy I hate second most.
Please elaborate.
Ja Rule, who has an IQ of what, 73? You're just like,
yeah, man. What up, dude? And we're going to, my brother Billy is going to,
Magnesis.
And I'm a mogul. And so I got to rule New York City.
Oh,
and
no, this reminds me. My favorite part.
I have a favorite part,
my
too.
My favorite part in both documentaries is the conference call after Fyre Festival happens. Where Ja Rule, where someone's like, I think the FBI is getting involved. They're talking about fraud. And Ja Rule's like, no, it wasn't fraud. It was just deceptive advertising,
right,
or something.
False advertising.
I was like, no, that's fraud. That's you're a dumb person.
Here's what
when he said that I was laughing out loud.
And it isn't really even Ja Rule that I hate. It is the world in which everybody knows that this guy is a moron, but then like puts him up on stage at a TED Talk or has him on Bloomberg TV or Fox Business or CNBC or whatever, and just puts a camera on him and pretends that, yeah, no, he's a business guy who understands business and is doing an interesting product. You do not have to have any sort of special insight into how the world of finance works. You do not have to be a genius. Anybody with half a brain of common sense could look at all of this and have said, no, this is none of this works. This is a fraud. It's like the Theranos thing. It's like the one guy, actually the one guy who the hero of all this is the millennial finance guy.
Who becomes the Twitter account Fyre Fraud.
Like, you know, putting up actual like maps of the island with the things like, look, here's the Sandals Resort right here. They don't have any running water. This isn't possible. This isn't going to happen.
They tried to shut him down.
The willful disregard of any, because you know we're in our own reality, but YOLO, whatever. I just hate it. And
well, why would they charge us $10,000 for a villa if they didn't have a villa to sell us?
$40,000 at the end. Oh, we're out of tens. You got to go up to the $40,000 level.
Why would I not pay $125,000 for a VIP package to the Instagram Island Model concert? They clearly have all of these things set up and ready to go.
My favorite line in the whole 3-hour mashup of the two, because I now sort of in my mind think of them together as one product, is I think it might be the very last line of the Netflix documentary where somebody says, I mean, the truth is there really was a Fyre Festival. And it was that shoot when we went down with the models. Yeah. And it happened twice because we did two shoots, and that was the Fyre Festival. Mm-hmm. And it's right. I mean, this is the people who got to enjoy the Fyre Festival were the scammers.
Yes.
The scammers who went down to film they created their own mini Fyre Festival for 30 people. They got to do it twice.
Yeah.
And then they got paid on top of it.
The best part was also the other great part was in the Netflix documentary. They showed the great clip of Dave Chappelle making the joke about Ja Rule, like, I gotta know what Jaws thinks. Oh my gosh, you know, what does Ja Rule think? You know, and that really summed it up. But Sonny.
I mean, just again, on a formal level of talking about the art of filmmaking, I do think that the Netflix one is better because it has better footage. Because it has that footage from the actual Fyre Festival, as we're saying, you know, from this photo shoot, they've got the photos of them. They've got video of the models just kind of running around and doing their thing. And that actually helps. I think that helps understand how people could get hypnotized into this idea that, yeah, this is a thing that will happen. We can will this into existence. We've done it once. We can do it again. And I just kind of prefer the interviews. We haven't even mentioned the gay event planner.
Yeah.
Who at one point is told that he is going to have to give pleasure to a Bahamian official
in order to get their
like trucks of Evian water out of lockup. And he's like, I was ready to do it.
Okay, so I heard the story ahead of time before I saw the documentary, and my first thought was, "Oh, this is some terrible thing. This guy, whatever, you know, this is the worst thing ever." And then you watch the documentary, and I actually really felt bad for that guy. And you know, he was like, he was gonna, you know, take one for the team. But here's my crazy thing. Here's my question. Who was it? McFarlane who suggested that he do this?
Yeah.
Okay, to the Bahamian guy. So McFarlane has this assumption that the Bahamian guy would want that. That's what I want to know from the old guy, from the 50 something year old guy. He would want that. That's what I'm saying. Without touching, so to speak, the issue itself here. I'm dancing around the subject here. But you know, like that's the weird thing. Oh, just because he does it, you'd want it.
Like who's to say, among us? Who's to say who would turn what down?
That is a bad assumption to make. The guy said no.
I have two things.
To his credit.
So I have, once or twice in my career, been settled down, Vic.
Look at Sonny squinting like, where's his question?
Settled down. Been approached by people who were obvious con artists with jobs. And it was once I was quite young, once I was a little bit older, and it was, yeah, come to this fantastic job. You're going to get paid a lot of money, and it's going to be great. And I went to meetings with these guys, and I listened, and I just said to them, how would you do this? How would you do that? This doesn't make any sense. One of them was for a magazine that was going to be starting up that I was offered to come and be like the deputy editor of as a 24-year-old or something stupid like that. And you know, and the guy was like, yeah, no, it's great. And, you know, I might buy you guys Porsches after our first anniversary. And, yeah. And I just kept saying, okay, but who's the audience? How are we going to get distribution? Yeah. And I was able to say, no, I will stay at my crappy job answering phones at this other place because what you're selling is insane and not real. And you're a huckster. It is not hard to identify con men. It really isn't. It's not rocket science because they're all insane.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And for every this is but why it, I got so pleasure. All of those people in the Netflix documentary who went along with it, they're all willing.
They had it coming.
Every one of them. And I hate it. And the one complaint I have about the Hulu, the fact that I thought it was a little bit sort of overly produced in the sort of, you know, the B-roll footage and shots of, like, you know, animation and stuff like that. I did not like the way they treated McFarland on camera. Precisely what you say with, like, the long pauses.
Yeah.
Because
they're stacking the deck against him.
They're stacking the deck against him, and my fear is that makes him look, like, 1% sympathetic. Yeah. And he doesn't need... You don't need to stack the deck against Hitler. And let's be honest, Billy McFarland is essentially worse than Hitler.
Well, it was also... So, did you notice how they shot him?
Yes, the fisheye. That itself with the fisheye lens below.
They shoot him a fisheye lens that must have been... The camera must have been at, like, on the shin floor. Level.
Yes.
Right.
I did not like that at all.
And I was just like, that's not necessary. You don't need to do that. And it's, like, clearly designed to make him look like a big galoot because it distorts his feet. His, like, legs look enormous. The whole thing is weird and awkward. And, like, I wondered while I was watching it if they had two cameras set up simultaneously. If they had one down there.
They did. Sure. They had the side one.
And then they had the one that, like, he's supposed to look into.
I believe they had three cameras rolling. I believe it was a three-camera setup. There was the fisheye lens on the bottom. A head-on one that they're saying, here, look into this, Billy, and then a side profile one.
Yeah, so he's looking askance.
I didn't like that.
And
either.
I thought the reason I didn't like it is because you don't need to stack the deck against him. Also, I thought they didn't make as good use of him as they could have. Like, I mean, I don't know what the rest of the raw footage looked like, but I think you could have gone after him harder than they did. Yeah. That said, it was still very interesting. There's a bunch of stuff.
Well, Hulu
in
also
that.
paid him.
Did they? Yes. And
no.
But he claimed, as our colleague Paul says, he claimed I think he was trying to get back to Netflix to let Netflix know that he was getting paid $250,000, or he wanted to.
He was trying to play Hulu and Netflix off each other.
And then Hulu's like, we did not pay that for him. So
that is amazing.
Yeah, yeah, he's getting paid. Everyone's getting paid except for the people who paid to go to it. So here's one parting question, I think.
Sure.
Do you guys believe, do you think that the Instagram models should be sued for partaking in this, for advertising it, for lending their names to this and convincing people to go?
JVL.
I don't think you can blame the Instagram models any more than you could blame the cameramen. The people I think might be culpable might be the F. Jerry guys, mm-hmm. who are actively deleting, not even like...
the information.
The info, yeah. Who are actually deleting information from the account, which yeah. was not like, not abusive, not, but people... raising legitimate questions.
People asking, saying, like, what are our flight numbers?
Right. People who are saying, I need to have some information about this and destroy. That, all of a sudden, I think, become... Now, maybe it's not legally dubious, but yeah. it probably should be, right? I mean, if you are a contractor
Totally should be.
You are then... That seems like an active attempt to defraud people.
If you're shining people on in an effort to get them to come to this, if you're sending them emails saying, you need to put money on this wristband... You need to put... This is going to be a cashless festival. You need to send us thousands of dollars.
But that's not F. Jerry. That was McFarland
Fire. Right. I'm just saying, like... But it's all part and parcel. Because yes. at the same... These two things are happening in concert with each other. Okay.
I agree. They didn't know about... You know, I mean, they weren't even there for the actual thing. So they weren't in on the... forget about the decisions. They weren't there for the lack of decisions about how are we going to supply all these things. They, you know,
they're just contrary. Do you, Sonny? Do you? Please swerve on this. No, swerve on this.
I don't. I mean, I don't feel bad for the Instagram models and the influencers, obviously. And I am glad that this whole event, in some minimal way, exposed what a fraud the industry is that they profit from. But you can't sue a spokesman because the product wasn't any good. I mean, you can't sue the e-cig company because, right. or wait, what's
the Marlboro Man?
No. What's Ray Liotta pitching now?
Chantix.
You can't sue Ray Liotta if Chantix makes your teeth fall out, you know?
Let me tell you something. I see that commercial with Ray Liotta. He needs to be on something else. Whatever it is, he needs to up the dosage. I have two final thoughts on Fire. One is, you know, the old saying about if it's too good to be true, then it's not. And I remember back in the 90s, Men's Health did a great story about hedonism too, where, you know, it's like, oh, you look at this. This place is going to be amazing. You got to go check out Hedonism too. Or it might have been in the early aughts. So they send a writer down there. And, of course, it's like 70% old divorce guys, yep. you know, at least. 30% women and maybe 10% younger than 50, you know. And, I mean, and that's what they arrived at Hedonism too. And the funny thing is I believe the editor of Men's Health at the time was Greg Gutfeld.
I believe it was.
That was a Greg Gutfeld kind of a story.
That is a classic his story. Yeah, yeah. He's such a great editor.
And the other thing is this. In terms of where our society is going and how this happened, when I watched the Fire documentaries, I was reminded years ago, maybe 7-8 years ago, when CityCard did a commercial for their new, like, get the credit card and the City Pass. And the commercial is available. You can check it out on YouTube if you type in City Commercial Alicia Keys. And it opens with a sort of very milquetoasty guy getting dumped by his girlfriend. The girlfriend says, "You're boring. You're boring." He says, "I'm boring. That's it. I'm getting my City Pass." And then he says, "That's how I met Marilyn." And he's at an art gallery looking at Marilyn Monroe. And that's how I met Giada. And he's at a tasting with Giada De Laurentiis. And he goes, "And that's how I met Alicia." And then at the end, she's singing "This Girl's on Fire." And she walks backstage. She passes him. She gives him a look. And he gives her a look. Now he feels special. And that's, and then here we are.
Oh my God.
It's like the classy magnesis.
Yeah. And then that's where we are, because they want to be a part. They're not anything and they want to be something. We're going to the Bahamas.
It's the greatest.
It's great.
The
it's
greatest
sick.
Movie
it's
ever. I will watch this movie probably, no joke, dozens of times. Over the coming year.
So at the end, we can already pencil this in as number one on your top 10.
100%.
It's a great documentary.
I just pleasure. Every pleasure center that I have in my body, because I am a natural born hater, is just tickled and massaged and edged. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing.
You know, they say that Disney's Castaway Key Island also was formerly used for drug running before, you know, back in the 80s. But you don't see them bragging about that. You know?
Well, the message they're bragging about is what cost them the island.
Yeah.
Because do you remember this? So first of all, they didn't buy the island. They were just renting it. Yeah. And the owner of the island said, just don't say anything about Pablo Escobar. And then
it's just, like the first thing in the video.
The very first thing he does then is yank it so they lose their sight.
They zoom out during the regatta.
So great.
Okay, do we have any final fire thoughts?
I hope that all those guys go to hell.
I know, really. At the end of their life, you say, what did you do? Well, I was an influencer. You know, that's it. Okay.
Who's the kid who, the blonde influencer kid, who is asked, like, what is it you do? And he's like, well, it's about positivity.
It's like what they all say. It's like, positivity. I'm about positivity.
It's my brand. And I'm living. And who's somebody even talks about, like, what a sacrifice it is to be an influencer? This is in the Hulu documentary.
Oh, yeah. Exposing your life to the.
You are, because you're trying to, like, so you know, show. Show your positivity and share it. You're sacrificing by letting all of these people into your own life. I mean, if you think the influencers are the greatest heroes of them all, it's amazing. It's God, so great. We should all die in a fire.
Thank you. Okay. Corrections, additions. Anything? I have one. Thank you to listener Brendan Dunn, who corrected my reference to the essay form. It's Montaigne, not Montesquieu. I could have said Montezuma. Okay. That's all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, compliments. Tweet us at Victoria Mattis, at Sunny Bunch,
at JB Last.
Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play. Just type in Subbeacon under podcasts. We are there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time.
I have a little something for you boys.
Great.
I think I have something to share.
I'm scared.
That you don't know about me, Victorino.
Well, I know a lot about you.
I know. It's been a long... It's nice to know after all these years I can still surprise him.
That's right. That was in the card you gave me. Okay, go ahead.
In my youth, from about the age 17 through 22, I was a concert guy.
What do you mean?
I went to Lollapalooza.
You went to shows?
No, I went to like Lollapalooza, the first revival of the...
Like back in 94?
Wow.
92. The revival of the music festival. Lollapalooza was the first music festival revival. Like, you know, there had been like 20 years without one. And after it succeeded, we got more Lollapaloozas. There was Warped. There was like Warped, which was for...
Woodstock 94. You know,
Woodstock 94 related. Right. This is all because of Perry Farrell's Lollapalooza. And my buddy Chris and I went to a giant... You would not think that me, with all of my little fastidious things, would be okay at a music festival.
With all these people.
But, where did you go to the bathroom?
I held it all day, obviously. I'm sorry. What did you think I did?
Well, I forget that you don't really drink, so you probably weren't like, you know...
No, I was 17. My buddy Chris and I, he had his license. I don't know if I had my license yet. And we got tickets to Lollapalooza in Scranton, Pennsylvania. And we drove out. We got a hotel room at a Red Roof Inn, like 20 miles away from the thing. It was the first time that I ever like went away quasi-unsupervised as a, like, this is a thing we're going to do. And I think Chris and I were literally the only people at Lollapalooza not either drunk or stoned.
Did you get a contact high just being exposed to all that?
No, but weirdly enough, I enjoyed it. This was back when I used to like being around.
What
other
were the bands?
People's or
yeah, yeah.
So let's see, who was there? Primus was a headliner. Mm-hmm. This is actually cool. Pearl Jam was there, and they were a mid-card act because they were in the process of breaking big. Mm-hmm. So they had...
So 10 had come out, but it wasn't...
They had just... But it had come out like 2 months before. Mm-hmm. And so Pearl Jam was in a weird... They were playing at like 3:00 in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody was there for it. It was Ice Cube or Ice T.
Nice.
Either Ice Cube or Ice T.
Uh-huh. Ice Cube would have been really good.
It's hard to tell them apart.
I like...
I'm kidding. And it was great. It was really, really good. Les Claypool. Watching Les Claypool play bass live was pretty awesome. He's like, this is a song about a friend of mine. He took a belt and he hung himself. It was, you know, it was great.
I'm pretty sure.
I was into that sort of thing back
then.
That's
amazing.
Yeah.
No, and I knew you like Primus, but I didn't realize you would. Yeah, you never told me at the time that you had gone to those concerts. I'm pretty sure that I got a contact high when I went to the Diana Ross concert in Central Park during the Wilding. because the guy in front of me was high as a kite, and I thought he was just acting weird. And we were there for like 4 hours, and he was right in front of me where you are, and I was nine.
Oh, I'm sure it's fine.